Welcome to Sports Talk with Tonsoni, the Indiana Baseball Edition. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni, and along with Chris Feeney, Josh Bennett, Cassidy Palmer, and Carl James, we will be bringing you information on Indiana baseball. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. I am your host, Brian Tonsoni. The 2018 season is complete for the Indiana Hoosier baseball team, and after competing in the NCAA Regional in Austin, Texas, the Hoosiers end up with a final record of 40 wins and 19 losses. In the Regional, Indiana went 2-2 and was challenging Texas right up until the last out until they were eliminated. The Regional was held a week ago. A quick recap. In the first game, IU was defeated by Texas A&M 10-3. In game two, now in an elimination game, Indiana came back to defeat Texas Southern 6-0, set up a rematch with Texas A&M in the loser's bracket, which Indiana jumped out to a big 9-0 lead and held on to win 9-7, which advanced them to the championship round where they would have had to beat Texas twice. And we almost got to that second game, losing 3-2 with the and had the bases loaded in the ninth inning. Overall, a solid effort by the Hoosiers in the regional, and just a couple key plays from advancing on to possibly the super regionals and a whole different ending to the season. And so we start out every segment with our Hoosier highlights. And Carl, the Texas game was a little bit of a heartbreaker. Your thoughts on how the season ended for the Hoosiers?
Well, yeah, the Texas game was a heartbreaker, but it was a really good highlight for the season. When you look at the regional as a whole, Texas was pretty much just running through that regional, scoring a ton of runs. And really, it looked like nobody was going to stop them. And then they came face-to-face with Andrew Salfrank, who really did pitch a phenomenal game and kept the game close, kept Indiana in the game the whole way, and had, to some degree, befuddled the Texas hitters. And the team fought their way all the way through that game, had some opportunities. In the end, didn't come through. But even I was looking on Twitter afterwards and seeing some things from Texas fans, and they're like, you know, we as Texas fans were really hyped about this Texas-Texas A&M matchup. But when it all came out of it, the great game of the regional was Texas-Indiana. And we realized that, wow, Indiana's a really good team and a really good program. And it was really awesome that Indiana could go down to Texas. You know, and Texas is now going to the College World Series, so and has been a traditional program. So Indiana took this opportunity to show up on a national stage and did quite well.
Carl, I think the point I would like to emphasize that you mentioned was Andrew Salfrank. He came on real late in the season and has been mentioned to have always had great stuff, but needed to have that focus or that mental ability to put that into play. And it seems like down the stretch, he had some very big games. And the game at Texas, I agree with you, was a tremendous effort by that young man. Chris, we had a great first inning in the third game against Texas A&M. You had to be going crazy. Share some thoughts about that elimination game that we won against Texas A&M, and specifically that first inning.
I got to tell you, as that game started, I had a bad feeling. I really did. You know, we're playing against the SEC, and, you know, I just didn't want the season end. I wanted that night game so bad, and the explosion of that first inning, hit after hit after hit to the left side. I remember the shortstop at one point just threw his hands up, put his head down. He was like they just couldn't be in the right spot. We just kept getting hit after hit after hit. And then the Bradley homer, the Lloyd homer, I mean, jumping up and down. It was like it wasn't even real. To put 9 runs up in the first inning, I had lost my mind, and I was in a living room with a whole bunch of other people losing their mind. And it was really, it was just an amazing experience. And luckily, we got all 9 of them.
And we needed all 9 of them. And it was nice to give a big inning back to them after they had a 7-run inning with 2 outs in the initial game in the regional that we couldn't overcome. And I think Texas A&M might have been that best team in that regional. And we had a hard time holding a 9-0 lead And we were very fortunate to knock them out and have a chance against Texas. Cass, you were busy at a wedding, and we thought about maybe borrowing you from the wedding over the weekend for a little viewing party, and it caused a little bit of trouble. So your Hoosier highlight.
Yeah, so for me, it was really being able to catch that second A&M game at Josh's house. Drove from Westfield down. I got there just as A&M was changing their pitcher at that first inning, and I was required to eat a cookie before I could come in and watch the rest of the game. And then we get another home run, and it's great. But really being able to enjoy the game, watch it with great people, that was really nice after missing the first two wedding rehearsal and then the wedding. But I also wanted to note real quickly that I also really enjoyed the pitchers throwing strikes again. They got that number back up to 63.8% for the regional weekend, which is right at the 64% season average. So yay for throwing strikes again.
Very good. Josh, you made the trip that I usually make on a Friday night, and you brought some great people with you in your vehicle. So now you guys know what it's like for us Tonsonis to drive down to Bloomington, and we appreciated you coming up to Delphi for the game. But talk about the entire regional run and being able to watch it with everyone.
Yeah, the games are great to watch, but what I'm going to be taking away from this regional is just being able to enjoy every game with part of our baseball family that we've created here this year. It started with the road trip, like you said, up to the region. The Caps placed that Friday night carpooling with Carl and Chris, and then we were able to host the watch parties at my house on Saturday afternoon, and Sunday, Cass got to stop by Sunday on her way back through, and we appreciate that, and we had a special guest, JB, on Saturday and Sunday as well. It was great to hang out with him and get to know him a little bit better, but just great food, great company, and it's fun to watch the games with just my immediate family. As you guys know, we do, and it's the same in your cases, I'm sure. It really does add to the atmosphere than when there are 10 high fives to go around after every big play instead of just four. So it was a great way to wrap up the season, and it's something that I'm really going to miss for these next 9 months.
Well, Winter Coat and I have to be on different levels for some reason when we're at home, similar to him taking walks at the ballpark. So we kind of were separate after you guys left. But, yeah, it is a good time to continue watching baseball if we can't do it at the BART. It was nice of you to host Saturday, Sunday, the group down there. My Hoosier highlight was we competed with some really quality baseball teams, Texas A&M and Texas. And it was a concern of mine after the Big Ten tournament and after the lull we had at the end of the year. Were we just good enough to beat some teams on our schedule, or are we really good enough to beat the very best on our schedule? And the last two games gave me a lot of hope that the team put it together. And even though we came up short, it was very competitive, especially after that first game. I was concerned that we might have been in over our league. And I'm telling you, Indiana baseball is not in over their head or out of their league when they go to play some of these teams. I think our record could have been a little bit better if we had found that earlier, but that was really good to see, and that's something that I'm going to take away. So we turn it over to Chris Feeney for the regional Limo Hats, and then we'll keep it with Chris because he's going to talk about the total awards that we talked about all year long. So, Chris, the show's yours.
All right. So to wrap up the regional Limo Hats, the Tony Butler Limo Hat of the Week is going to go to Matt Gorski. For that play he made going to left field, he covered a ton of ground. And after had just given up the no, it was tied. We had just gone down a run. I don't even think the announcers realized he made the play. I think everybody thought that ball was either gone or was going into the corner, and he went over there and he got it. And he made sure it was just a one-run game. So Matt Gorski is going to get the defensive Limo Hat of the Week. For the offensive Limo Hat regional style, it's going to be Luke Miller. Guy basically hit 500 for the regional. Okay, he had a couple of home runs in that first game. He started that rally in the eighth inning to get Gorski up. If only that wall would have been a little higher. But two out single by Miller there. And he always seemed to get the big hit. Luke really had an amazing regional where the pressure was on against the pitchers and the pitchers that we were facing. He really stood out. So he gets the Alex Dickerson Lino hat. And for the pitcher, talk about an unexpected Lino hat pitcher of the week to give out. Andrew Salfranc. He earned it, okay? Unexpected. If he would have thrown three innings and given up two or three runs, I would have got happy and said, you know what? Let's bring in somebody else. But this guy got the ball into the sixth inning, eight strikeouts, two of them of Clemens. And I think he's the only pitcher in college baseball that Clemens hasn't hit a home run off of. This guy has hit about five home runs since. Salfranc struck him out twice. Let's see, what else do I got for him here? Just the two runs, like I said, he was throwing strikes. The announcers couldn't have talked any better about that breaking ball. I mean, over and over again, they were just praising Salfranc and how impressive he was. He really stepped up. So he's going to get the Joey Donato Lino hat. It's been a fun season giving them out. And as far as the totals, now let's see. I got to pull these up here. I got to thank Josh for going together and getting them for me. Let's see. The Alex Dickerson Award, as far as defensive. No, excuse me. The Tony Butler, as far as defensive. We have a tie. Okay. Two players ended up with three, Matt Gorski and Logan Sowers. So we have an actual tie for the Tony Butler Award. For the offensive, Luke Miller. Okay, he ended up with four Lino hats. And then for the Pitcher of the Year Award, the Joey Donato, also with four, Paulie Milton. So there you go. There were our season-long Lino hats. And I got to say, it was fun giving them out. And let's hope maybe we could give out a couple during fall ball and, you know, into 2019.
There's a lot of good play throughout the year, and I think that those year-end awards speak volume. I think our outfield defense was really solid. Our arms were really good, and they made a lot of plays and catches that sometimes would not be made, and our guy Kalitha could be added in there defensively. We got better once Luke got healthy. There's no doubt Luke hit the ball, and it was a contagious, and we got back to a little bit of that potent offense, and Paulie was just dominant. You could have given him the Lino Award for the regional because it was a complete game, even though it was against the fourth seed, but a complete game saving our bullpen was a huge event there. So, but there were a lot of good efforts. Congratulations to every player who earned a Lino hat. Hopefully the coach, Coach Lemonis, knows that and appreciates you players out there. And I'll slide a Lino hat on to you every once in a while. But we appreciate that. Chris, I think you did an excellent job with that. So the 2019 season is over. A 40-win season is a very awesome season. And being a Big Ten school, 5 years out of the last six making the tournament, the last three tournaments have been by at-large, which has been rare for Big Ten baseball. So Indiana baseball is on the rise. Big Ten baseball is also on the rise, and we have a lot to look forward to. So, Cassie, a little bit about what happened this past season from your vantage point. You've been our statistical guru. What kind of things did you see offensively and defensively that really stood out for you in 2018?
Yeah, so to start off, I am a little limited on my stats. Still working on getting all of those updated from not keeping my scorecard live throughout the weekend. But as far as stats, some of the offensive things that stood out to me from the team as a whole, this season was the most runs scored per game since the Schwarber-Travis DeMuth years in 2013 and 14. So while there were some little kinks with the offense at times, they were still scoring runs better than the last few years. And the other thing that I noticed was the offense drew about 4.25 walks per game. And this is the highest since at least 2012, which is when the historical stats start on the website. Closest was 2013 at just over 4. It was like 4.01. So the offense was being patient too, which was really good to see. Some of the individual things that stood out, Kalitha had a walk rate of 15.5%. So So over 15% of his plate appearances ended in a walk. And that's not even including his HBPs. So that led all of the team with at least two plate appearances per game. I would also like to point out that Sours was second at 14%, which was almost double his rate from last season. Fineman had the lowest strikeout rate at 14.6%, which was 3 percentage points below last season. Gorski led the team in batting average with two strikes at 277. Matt Lloyd was the most productive with runners in scoring position at 488, which was up 155 points from last season. Scotty Bradley was the most productive overall at 485, which is great to see coming back his first year after injury. Justin Walker had the best average with two outs at 333. And despite the low batting average, Jeremy was the third most productive with runners in scoring position at 467. Logan Sours saw the most pitches per plate appearance of the team at 4.15. And the one that kind of struck, Luke actually hit the same with two outs as he did for all, batting right at 309 for both. On the pitching side, as a team,
I'm going to interrupt you with the question here real quick. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You just shared with me that there were a lot of different people leading a lot of different stats. But if you could pick out one, who had the best statistical year offensively? I know that's putting you on the spot, and I might have should have told you that ahead of time. But what stat maybe, what player do you think is, man, this is the best offensive stat of the year?
Ooh. That's tough. Because I think overall, Matt Gorski was the most consistent, had the best overall line. But I think if Scotty Bradley had been able to get in a little bit more at the start of the season, I think his could have been right up. I kind of have an asterisk. He's right at the number. He and Justin Walker are kind of right at the number of plate appearances needed to be eligible. So if Scotty had seen more at bats, I think Scotty could have been right up there with Gorski.
And both of those guys are coming back, which we'll get to later in the show. So sorry to put you on the spot, great answer. Yes. Now you can go to your pitching stats.
Yes. So on the pitching side, I noticed that there were only four games where the staff gave up more walks than strikeouts, which I know is a big thing that Coach Bunn pushes. The earned runs given up were also down from last season, down 1.5 earned runs per game. That's a lot. So that was good to see. And on the back end, the staff converted on 71% of the goose egg opportunities, which we've discussed in the past. So that was a pretty good mark. On the individual side, Stever, who's known for pounding the strike zone, had the highest percent of plate appearances where he threw a first pitch strike at 69.5%, which is about where he was last year. That's really high, so it's not unusual for that to not. Pauly actually threw the fewest pitches per inning at 14.1, and a very high percentage of those were strikes as well. Andrew Solfrank had the highest strikeout rate on the team, strikeouts per batters faced at 31.5%, which is absolutely nuts, and was up 8 percentage points from last season. He may have had some walk issues at times, but man, when he was on, you couldn't hit him. The thing that stood out to me for Timmy Herron was his opponent batting average with runners in scoring position decreased each month of the season. That was 333 is never ideal. But then in May and June, month of May and June combined, it was 182. So he had that going once the season went on. Tommy Summer as a – yeah.
Nope. I thought you were done there. I have a question, though, for you when you're done.
Okay, I have a few more. Tommy Summer coming in as a freshman had the second best opponent batting average with runners in scoring position at 133. Connor Maness in in slightly odd time. He had at least 20 innings pitched, but he had the second best walk rate on the team at 6.7%. Cam Beauchamp was one of just two eligible pitchers to not give up a home run on the season. Matty Lloyd was the other one. BJ Sable dropped his ERA about 2 points from last season to this season, which was really impressive. And it had been even lower for a large portion of the season. Cal Kruger had the second best strikeout to walk ratio at 3.5, which was about two times better than his ratio last season. And finally, Matt Lloyd, just 3.5% of the hits against him were extra base hits, which was the best on the team by a good margin.
Okay, so which pitcher had the best statistical year in your opinion?
I'm going to give two answers to this because two different viewpoints. Paulie was the best starter, pretty well hands down. Matt Lloyd was the best reliever. Again, pretty well hands down. They were both locked in almost the entire season.
And I'll come back and say that I thought our bullpen was pretty solid, but they were streaky. And we had some people who were really dominant early, and then maybe through, you know, too many appearances or whatever, they struggled down the end. And then we had some people who weren't really solid in the bullpen start and were reliable in the bullpen down the stretch. I'd like to see, again, this is the recap, but if we're talking looking ahead, I'd like to see that even out a little bit. Carl has said some really solid things about developing arms. I think one of the last times we were together at the BART, and I couldn't agree more. But Cassie, thank you for your stats. We're going to send it over to Carl now. And Carl, we all were excited about the players coming back and the preseason hype and the talk of bleachers. And I think I am being a little critical of myself. I think that might have been a little bit unfair and a little bit more of a fan type of thing. But how close were we to preseason expectations where we ended up? And obviously a 40-win season is successful regardless of bleachers or where we were ranked or whatever. That was a solid win. So talk to us a little bit about where we ended up compared to where we expected to be.
Well, I like to talk about it in the sense of there's kind of an arc to the story about the expectations of the team. And I'm going to start with the end of 2017's Big Ten tournament. Chris Webb had gone on a line and said that after seeing the Big Ten tournament and knowing what, you know, the general idea of what players were going to be back for the teams in the Big Ten, that he kind of felt that 2018 was going to be a battle between Indiana and Minnesota for the Big Ten favorites. Which is interesting because most everybody else in the media ignored Minnesota. Right after that, right after the regionals, actually right after the College World Series, Baseball America came out with their first look at the new, at the 2018 season. And they had predicted that Indiana would reach a super regional, not get to Omaha, but would reach a super regional. So these were real far out projections. You then fast forward to the immediate preseason, January, February. D1 Baseball had Indiana ranked 23rd in the country. USA Today Coaches had Indiana ranked 27th in the country. So if you take that to the end of the season, really not far off from those initial preseason numbers, which might be kind of a surprise based on the things that kind of happened in the meantime. Baseball America did say that Indiana was going to be the team to beat in the Big Ten. D1 Baseball said that Indiana would win the Big Ten. And I guess if there was a disappointment, it was really in conference play. But what's interesting, and I go back to Chris Webb, is that when Chris Webb made his predictions for the Big Ten, he had predicted that Minnesota was going to win. And he was, again, pretty much the only media person that had Minnesota, you know, in the mix. I had Minnesota in the mix, but the reason I had Minnesota in the mix was more around strength of schedule. I did the detailed analysis on the Big Ten strength of schedule, and I knew that Indiana was going to have an uphill climb just because of how much more difficult Indiana's schedule was compared to the top teams in the league. So then you get into the 9-2 start on the road and at the neutral sites, 6-2 opening homestand. So Indiana really made some splashes. When Indiana went to San Diego, San Diego was thought to be a great program and having a great year. So that 3-1 was a big deal. A lot of those things elevated the media rankings. So Indiana was making big splashes early. Some teams were falling off, and Indiana just kept creeping up in the media rankings until it was getting into top 10 in several of them. But again, a lot of that, as it turns out, was really just because Indiana was taking care of business, not getting beat by bad teams, which was an improvement over the prior year. Then the Big Ten season hit. We had the injuries to Pauly Milto and Luke Miller. Minnesota turned out to have the missing piece to their puzzle, which was that they had much better pitching in this freshman pitching group that they had. So they really were solid during the Big Ten season. And because of the difficult strength of schedule, Indiana finishes fifth. But still 14-9 with that strength of schedule was not bad at all. And when you adjust that for strength of schedule, it was second in the league, only to Minnesota. So Indiana had a solid league. As you mentioned earlier, won 40 games. And actually, when you look at the RPI, landed roughly where the national media thought they were going to based on the preseason performance. And then got to the regional championship and was the one team to give Texas a game. So you look at that arc, and the truth is the team pretty much met most of those expectations. Yes, you want to win a regional. And when we were looking at a top 10 ranking, we were really thinking, what would it take to get to host a regional? That would have been awesome. But when you really took that 30,000 foot view, the team accomplished what was awesome for a Midwestern team. And like you said, this is the fifth regional appearance in 6 years, the third time in 6 years to hit 40 wins. We talked about the names that Cassidy brought up. A lot of those are returning players for next year. So this is a solid program. This is going to continue to be a solid program, and they continue to meet expectations. So I call the season a success.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. The season was a great success. We as fans need to understand that baseball is a streaky game. And I think for me personally, I won't speak for the rest of the crew. When we're 29 and 8 or 26, we are sitting there ranked number 8. You don't understand that, water finds its level, right? That everything balances out. And so, Carl, do you think that the streakiness that we were really hot early and had an incredible record, and then we kind of ran into some tough competition and lost a 4-game losing streak, then a 5-game losing streak. It seemed worse than what it was. And when you end up 40-19 and battling Texas, that is a really good year. Do you think the streakiness had something to do with some of that perception of us fans?
Yes. And I would put one more piece into that, which is that especially in some of the earlier times, there have been a lot of seasons where Indiana's really struggled out of the gate. And this year, and we were talking about that, we were concerned about that. And they just came out great out of the gate. Part of it may have been the good weather in January. We would have liked some of that weather like in March, but the good weather in January allowed the team to actually get outside and like catch fly balls and stuff that they often don't get a chance to do. So I think that may have helped a little bit. But the team was ready. It's a veteran team, and I think that helped. And that's another thing. You start the season, they were better than everybody else at the beginning of the season because they were a veteran team. And a lot of teams that were dealing with younger talent, had more upside simply because they hadn't already been there. This Indiana team did it last year. They exceeded expectations last year, and this year they met them. So again, success.
I would also throw in that during that stretch where we kind of slowed down, we had two major injuries. Yes. We had Pauly Milto, who we've just said it was the best statistical, got the Limo Hat Awards. He was out for a month. And yes, our other guys are solid, and we're not demeaning any of that. But when you lose your number two starter, that just throws everyone. That's when the bullpen started to get used. and struggle. So that injury was tough. And I think Luke Miller's injury for a month too hurt from his personal production, and then the protection in the lineup as well, I think had to do something with that. And so, yeah, this is where we thought we would be. And if we said when we first did this, our first show, 40-19 and playing for a regional championship, bases loaded, one out, I think we all would take that opportunity again. And that's what we need to remember. Thanks, Carl. Appreciate it quite a bit. Josh, a lot of big moments in the season, a lot of big moments at the BART. Share with us some of your thoughts about this season in those areas.
Yeah, Brian, just so many great moments and highlights from the season. When I went back and started looking through the highlights, it was hard to believe all these things happened in one year. I'd forgotten about a lot of them, to be honest. The big moment that started all seems like it was forever ago, but the first highlight has to be Logan Kalitha announcing his presence with a walk-off grand slam versus South Alabama. I mean, that seems like forever ago. We had Logan and Luke go back-to-back to tie and then take the lead late against Pacific in a game we had no business winning, and the momentum was swung the other way. Gorski with an inside-the-park home run at Purdue. That was a fun moment. Jeremy Houston walking it off in the 14th to end nearly a five-hour game against Ball State. Scotty Bradley's walk-off hit. One of my personal favorites, Drew Ashley's walk-off home run. That was just a great moment to be a part of, be there to witness. Kalitha with one of the best catches of the season late in the rubber match against Purdue, and then turning right around to hit a walk-off home run to end it. Gorski's three-run home run in the bottom of the ninth with two outs in the Big Ten tourney. The first inning of the A&M game, I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's hard, you know, you forget about a lot of those moments, but when you're there, it was a great experience. And finally, a personal favorite of mine was Drew and Bo being able to throw out a first pitch together. I know that wasn't high on your guys' list, but that
– Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
That was mine. I'm being selfish on that highlight.
But, it was fun. Come on.
I mean, what a season chocked full of excitement. I know it didn't end the way we wanted it to, but looking back on it, I just forgot about a lot of those great things that we were able to witness and experience. It's why we love the game and spend countless hours following and covering it. It truly is the best.
You know, I think it's remarkable the number of walk-offs that we witnessed this year. I don't know that happens that regularly.
Yeah.
But
I don't remember,
Josh,
that many.
Which one was your favorite walk-off? Let me just say walk-off home run. There were what, three walk-off home runs?
Logan had two. Drew had his.
And then we had a couple of walk-off singles too, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
What was your favorite walk-off moment? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to root against sharing that home run with Chad and seeing his excitement, but I'm honestly going to have to go with the grand slam to kick it off. We were all, that's the kind of the first time we had our direct messaging hooked up. And like we talked about in one of the first podcasts, we were sitting in a parking lot trying to find reception so we could see the update. And then just seeing when that finally went through, cause we weren't able to watch it when that finally went through. And then all of us just boom, 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 boom. Recapping with a heck yeah or whatever it was at that moment. That's probably going to be tough to top.
You know, it's kind of hard to make you pick a walk-off because they're all just fantastic, right? So that's bad questioning on the host part right there. But I wasn't at the Purdue walk-off, which would always be good when you beat Purdue. For me, that would be I ran those 2 hours home. It might have taken me 8 hours, but maybe more than that. But the win against Illinois and seeing a kid who hadn't been playing a lot hit that home run, that was remarkable too. But a lot of big moments. And so the 2019 season or 2018 season ends, and with that comes the fact that some players graduate, and we had a senior episode earlier, and now comes the draft, and we had four players drafted, one of which was one of those seniors. And so there are three juniors eligible or draft eligible players that were drafted. And we're going to go over those results real quick on each one. We're going to start with Carl in the 29th round. Timmy Heron was selected, and share a little bit about that.
Yes, Timmy Heron gets some draft notice, and you know he was not on a lot of people's radars as far as the press goes. And you kind of look at the arc of his season. You know, first month of the season, he was, you know, in a 6-9 range in ERA. And then he, you know, this is a guy who basically played his way into the draft. He went back to his hometown of Terre Haute and took care of business against Indiana State. And then really became a key piece of this team. You know, and as a lefty, he was able to demonstrate what he was capable to do. And now, you know, he's going to get a shot in the bigs. So congratulations to Timmy Heron.
Went to the White Sox, correct?
No.
In the 29th
Cleveland.
Round?
Cleveland.
Oh, Sowers went to the White Sox, and Stever, yeah. Those two went to the White Sox. And speaking of Logan Sowers, he went in the 28th round to the Chicago White Sox. Josh, tell us a little bit about Logan's draft or career.
Yeah, this is the second time he's been drafted. The first time was following his 2014 Indiana Mr. Baseball campaign. He went in the 31st round of the Padres that year. But his IU career highlights, 2015 All-Big Ten freshman team, 2016 team MVP, 2017 Player of the Year, and he'll leave IU in the top 10 in hits, doubles, and home runs. Congrats to Logan on an outstanding IU career. We all look forward to rooting him on and following his progression through the minor league system. The way it looks now, in a few years, I could be a converted White Sox fan watching Stever start on the mound with Craig Deeds and Logan behind him in the outfield. So, I hate to say I might be a fan of a Chicago team, but if that would happen, I definitely would be.
They're all going to do so well, they're going to get traded away from the White Sox. So that's just – being a Cubs fan, that's my hope. But no, I wish them well wherever they go. Round 22, Luke Miller to the Phillies. Do I have that correct?
Yes, unfortunately you do. He's a Philly. I will not be rooting for the Phillies, though, regardless of who they end up with. For Luke Miller and his career, 36 career doubles, 24 career home runs, 102 career RBIs. He won the Louisville Slugger Freshman All-American Award. He was an All-Big Ten freshman as well. His sophomore year, he got drafted by the Twins, 31st round, decided to come back. And, you know, this year, so many big home runs. The three-run homer in Nebraska when we, you know, the season was really spiraling out. You know, the captain had to pull the emergency tailgate for us. And then the very next game, Miller hits that three-run bomb, and I really think that inning really jump-started those final five wins. There was another three-run homer, if I remember it, the Bart, following a certain song, which will always be remembered. And the Lazy Mary home run will always be Luke Miller's. I wish him well. I really want him to do well in the minor leagues. You know, his minor league career, I want to do great. Then I want him traded away from the NL East, and I will root for him for every major league at-bat he takes.
Congratulations, Luke. And finally, in the fifth round to the Chicago White Sox, Jonathan Stever. Cassie, tell us a little bit about Jonathan's career.
Yes. So to start off, this was actually the 16th IU pick in the fifth round or better. And as we've said, he could soon join former Hoosier center fielder Craig Dedalo, who was drafted in the 9th round last season and is currently with Class A Kannapolis. Jonathan was first team All Big Ten this season. He led the Hoosiers in innings pitched at 100.1. innings, which was over 30 more than last season. He led the conference in strikeouts at 97, and throughout his time, he consistently pounded that strike zone.
Congratulations to Jonathan Stever. Logan Sowers has completed his eligibility. The other three are likely to sign and go play, I would imagine. If they don't, they can come back for another year of Indiana baseball, but we wish them all the luck and make the best decision for them. Each of them have given to Indiana University baseball all that they've had, and we wish them all the luck and the best decision-making and maybe some good money as well for your work. Chris, we're coming back to you. This Saturday presents an interesting viewing opportunity for Indiana baseball fans who'd like to see some future Hoosiers. Fill people in, please.
Absolutely. It's actually can be a two-day event. Friday night is the Fishers game. Grant Richardson is going to be playing for Fishers. He, in the semi-state, got the six-out save to finish that game. He had two RBIs in the game as well. They've moved the Fishers game to Friday night at 7:30. That's a standalone night game. Then on Saturday, there's three games. The second two games will feature three future Hoosiers. Ty Bothwell will be starting for Boone Grove. That's the 2 p.m. game. He threw a complete game shutout on Saturday. It was a 1-0 win. I mean, he had guys on base. He buckled down. I was following that game a lot. He really stepped up for his team. This guy is special, man. This guy's going to – I really look forward to seeing Bothwell.
And, Chris, I think Boone Grove won the game with one hit. They scored one run on one hit. So he had that pressure of that whole game that his offense was not producing to hold off Lafayette Central Catholic, who has won some state championships and has been a solid baseball program. So that speaks volumes to me about that young man from Boone Grove.
He'd fit right in on Fridays for us, actually, now that you point that out.
That's what I was going to say.
He's ready for the Friday night start.
He's a Friday night guy if you can win 1-0 games. The following game on Saturday, you know, it'll be 45 minutes after the Boone Grove game. We're going to have Sammy Barnett. Odds are he'll be starting. They 10-run ruled their opponent in the fifth inning. It was 10-0 win. But Holden Grower, the left fielder, is also a future Hoosier. He bats fifth for them. He had three RBIs, and it sounds like he made an amazing catch in left field. I think the game was out of hand already, but that really shows me more that he'll just give all out on a play like that in a lopsided game. I really look forward to seeing both of them. I know I'll be out there. I'm going to go out there for the doubleheader on Saturday. Can't make Friday night, but that game is going to be on TV. It's going to be on the local Fox Sports Midwest channel. Sometimes the Pacers are on that channel and other, you know, Midwest sports. So it'll be on a cable channel. I'm going to send out all the information on the site and the Twitter account. And, you know, if anybody wants to go out and see some future Hoosiers, come out Friday or Saturday to the Vic. I went last year. It's a good time. I saw Michael Dunkelberger win the title. And then what was the second game? Cathedral won the nightcap. And it's a real good time out there. You get to see the, you know, the high schools bring all down their fans. And I tell you, Jasper brought it. I couldn't believe how many people they have brought, but they did lose that game. The Vic puts on a real good show for these kids. They print up the shirts right away. They give them out. They get the hats. And hopefully we see three guys we're going to see coming in fall ball win the state title. And then Mr. Holden Grower, you know, he's only a freshman. He's starting on that team. So I really think that could be a big bat coming our way soon, too, obviously a few years away.
So there's some future Hoosiers will be on the diamond at a wonderful park. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend, Friday and Saturday, you can come out and see some future Hoosiers. And speaking of the future, we have 2019 baseball that is about 4 or 5 months away from fall ball, and we'll bring you some reports on that. But right now, Cass, what are you looking forward to the 2019 season?
So for me, I really want to see the offensive development, particularly with Matt Gorski. During 2018, his development from freshman to sophomore year really struck me. His batting average went up 68 points to 356. His strikeout rate was down 3 percentage points to 14.7, just off of Brian Pineman for the lowest on the team. His batting average with two strikes went up almost 100 points. His batting average with runners in scoring position was up 63 points. His overall protect rate was up 69 points. So if he can make a similar type of jump from sophomore to junior year, as he did freshman to sophomore year, in addition to his phenomenal defense and his ridiculous arm, his base running speed, I think he could pretty easily be a top 5 rounds pick after next season, possibly a first day pick. He has the potential to be something really special. So I really want to see how that offensive development happens. Among the rest of the team, I just want to see a little more consistency out of some guys over the course of the season. A guy like Matt started the season as cold as you can get. He started this after the first week of play. He was batting, let's see, I've got it here. He was batting 063, as cold as you can get. But then he heated up as the season went on. Fineman and Kalitha had the opposite. They started as hot as you can be and kind of went quiet down the stretch. And even a guy like Jeremy Houston, he probably won't ever really hit you with the bat, but he did hit 294 for the month of May. That's facing teams like Minnesota, Kentucky, Louisville, even in down years, Nebraska and Maryland. If he can maintain even 250 throughout the season, you call it a win with the glove that he has. So seeing some of those other guys even out throughout the season is what I want to see next year.
I think consistency is a key word, and I can't agree with you more. Carl, what are you looking forward to in 2019?
I'm going to go along similar lines, but I'm going to take it in a much smaller piece, which is I'm going to look at an individual week. Indiana, if you look at their performance on the opening game of any week, Indiana went 8-8. And you compare that to the overall record of 40-19. And then you also consider that all of those games were started by Jonathan Stever, who was the top draft pick. So you look at this, and the team really needs to do better at generating runs on Fridays. And part of that goes to the consistency, you know, Cassidy was talking about. That yes, you're going to find better arms on Fridays, but are they really that much better? So if the team can get off to better starts, can find the right mix to get a combination of good shutdown pitching and then just enough offense to get them over the hump and win a few more of those games, possibly go 10-6 or 12-4 in that set, could really help the team do better overall. And also just get, you know, that's the game that gets the week going and not always be trying to come from behind. That's what I'm looking forward to. And I think they've got the ability to do it. We don't even know who the Friday starter is going to be yet. It was clear that Pauly Milto had the best performance as far as getting the results, and that may be what drives it. But it also may simply be, does somebody who's got really, really good stuff, somebody like a Cam Beecham, somebody like an Andrew Salfrank, could possibly step into that role if they're able to show consistency. So there's a lot of good things to look forward to, and I'm looking forward to seeing especially better Fridays.
I agree again, Carl. The Friday stuff gets to be frustrating, and those are the best arms of every team that we're playing on the weekend. But we are a program that I think consistently is a top 30 program, and we're in position to stay in that area somewhat, give a year or two, graduates leaving and so forth, dropping out of that. But if you're in that top area, I think we need to consistently be better offensively on those nights. And that might be an approach of moving runners, doing those things. I agree with you quite a bit. Chris, what are you looking forward to next season, 2019?
A couple of things. A lot of good arms coming in. And obviously, they're not all going to be starters. So that could give us some more options out of the bullpen. Maybe not repeating the same guys, you know, as much as we were. And maybe that would change the outcomes towards the end of the year. But a lot of good arms coming in. Using some of the freshman arms that maybe we didn't touch as much this season, we could, you know, use a little bit more in 19. Also, got some big bats coming in. Jeffrey Holtz out of Wisconsin. Really looking forward to seeing him get here in the fall. Grant Richardson, who's going to be playing Friday night. He's a big, big bat. He's a two-way guy, but he's got a power bat. Don't let anybody tell you he's just a pitcher, because he's not. He's a power outfielder as well. And Elijah Dunham, I'm looking forward to, too. I think he just didn't get playing time. He plays a little bit more, and I feel like we could have really three big bats in the lineup that we didn't use last year. And just want to add one thing as far as the highlights of the season. Josh mentioned a lot of the walk-offs and stuff. I got to mention that Friday night of the doubleheader of fireworks night. Jeremy Houston, the two-out single to tie the game, and then we took the lead. I believe it was Kalitha. That Friday, that second half of that doubleheader, the Bart was rocking. Really, that's a memorable half inning for me. The bottom of the eighth, I think it was like Northwestern or whatever. The team wasn't a big-time team, but we needed to win that game. And that was a real fun highlight for me from the Bart for 18.
One of the things, Chris, you said that I find fascinating about baseball and Indiana baseball, because we follow it, but is the names that you're not sure of that come in and have a huge role. Gorski coming in. We knew he was coming in, but boy, he was really solid as a freshman. Matt Lloyd, Kalitha. There are a lot of, you know, coach does a really good job of finding these players. I think next year for me, looking forward to, is the competition. We are losing a couple of people in the lineup that are very hard to replace, but we have had people fill in for injuries. We've had two or three second basemen. We've had some people play third base. You have Dunham and Crail who had some important at-bats, and you have the new people coming in. I think the competition level itself will lift and help make up for some of the errors. Josh, what are you looking forward to in not the errors, but some of the missing of those two players is what I meant. Josh, what are you looking forward to in 2019?
Yeah, I don't want to look forward to 2019 too much. I always look forward to getting that first look at the newbies in fall ball, so I don't want to skip past that. That's one of my favorite things every year. Just being able to get a firsthand look at some of the JUCO transfers, the incoming freshmen that Chris has told us about that will be playing in the title game this weekend. We've been tracking them throughout the season. Fall ball really fills the void left by the off season. It gives us something to think about, how the pieces might fit and who might be able to come in and fill the voids for the guys that are leaving the program. But also it gives us a look at how some of the new guys, returning guys, have progressed their games in the summer months. So I believe this year's alumni game is October 13th. So the fall game should be around that time frame, if you want to take time to plan ahead for that. I'm not going to skip forward to 2019 yet. I'm going to enjoy 2018 and fall ball first.
So, you know, a lot of good baseball has happened this year in 2018. A lot of good things still to happen with some of our players that are coming in still playing. A lot of summer league action that IUBase.com is covering awesomely already. We're seeing some of the players already making an impact at their summer leagues. Make sure you follow IUBase.com. Josh, you wanted to say a few final words before we sign off.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say thank you to everyone who has supported the website and the podcast this season. It's been great to get your feedback, even get to know a lot of you either at the park or at the tailgates or up at the rail. We've really enjoyed bringing you content this season. We thank you for allowing us to share our obsession and passion with you. We look forward to growing from this experience in our first season and hopefully make the product better down the road. But thanks for your support and looking forward to the next season. We're looking to have some special interviews this offseason like we did with Mr. Kaufman and Greg Murray, but this time maybe with former players. We'll try to get a coach or two on to give a recap or let you know what to look forward to next spring. I'm sure Cassie and Carl will be providing some stat recaps and other stuff to the Hot Corner page on the website. And one last thing, Brian, from the rest of us, thank you, Cap, for all you've done to get these podcasts up and running. It's been fun and exciting, and we couldn't have done it without you. Can't wait for the 2019 season.
Well, thank you very much, and out to all of the people who have joined IUBase.com, followed this podcast on Twitter and watched it and come up and said something. We thank you. It's been awesome. We do it because we love Indiana baseball, and we love meeting everyone else who loves Indiana baseball. Look for a few podcasts. We've been talking off the air before we went on broadcast about topics, about former players and so forth. So we won't be coming every to you every week, but look for us so often. And knowing this group, they kind of miss each other, so we might be on a little bit more than what we plan to do in the off season. But enjoy your off season, find some good baseball to watch, and we will see you next season. So that'll do it for Talking Hoosier Baseball. Please find all future podcasts on Sports Talk with Tonsoni, which can be found on your favorite podcast source, as well as under the Talking Hoosier Baseball tab on IUBase.com. Please follow IUBase.com on Twitter. Their handle is at IUBase17. Follow the Talking Hoosier Baseball podcast on Twitter. The handle is at CUatTheBart. And visit IUBase.com to see other articles and other posts from our team.
I'm going back to Indiana now.
For the game.
See my baby.
This is the 2018 sign-off. I'm Brian Tonsoni. Go Hoosiers.